it was forgotten. Well, we might ask, why was Dr. King killed? Well, I think the reason was he was opposed to the Vietnam War, which was raging at the time in 1968. Exactly 1 year before, he'd made his well-known Riverside Church speech opposing the war, which got him in a lot of trouble with other civil rights groups. And then in the last year of his life, he was organizing a poor people's campaign. And this was going to be a march of poor people, white and black. It was not just a civil rights struggle. It was a class struggle. And poor people from around the country were going to converge on Washington, D.C., and they were going to probably camp out in the mall. And so this got the establishment more than angry. They were really kind of terrified of all these poor people camping out in the mall for who knows how long. So that is, in essence, if you want to find out more about the King assassination, I really recommend a book called An Act of State by William Pepper. You can find out everything you need to know there. Now it turns out that President Obama has fears that the same thing could happen to him. And this came out, I first read about it. It's in a blog called Mondo Weiss. It's just a blog put out by Philip Weiss, who talks a lot about Zionism and Israel, and he picked up a story. It was actually on WBAI, the Pacifica station in New York, on the Law and Disorder show, and where the show was two lawyers were interviewing Ray McGovern, who has been on KABU numerous times. Ray McGovern was he'd been in the CIA for 27 years. He was retired, and his job in the CIA was to brief the president in the morning. When the president comes to work at the White House, one of the first things is the CIA has a guy there to sort of give him a synopsis of all the important news. And Ray McGovern was that guy. Well, Ray McGovern now is very much a peace activist, and he was interviewed on Law and Disorder. And this is what he has to say. This is Ray McGovern quoted. Why the host was asking him why is President Obama seem to be backing away from all the progressive stance that he was talking about as a candidate. And this is Ray McGovern, which leads to the question, why would he, that's President Obama, do all these things? Why would he be afraid, for example, to take the drones away from the CIA? Well, I've come to the conclusion that he's afraid. Number one, he's afraid of what happened to Martin Luther King Jr. And I know from a good friend who was there when it happened that at a small dinner with progressive supporters, after these progressive supporters were banging on Obama before the election, wanted to do the things we thought you stood for, Obama turned sharply and said, quote, "Don't you remember what happened to Martin Luther King Jr.?" That's a quote, and a very revealing quote. Later on, McGovern says, now, does he have any reason to fear the CIA? Well, he sure as heck does. For those of your listeners who have not read James Douglas's JFK and the Unspeakable, you need to read that because it's coming up on 50 years. The mystery has not been solved in the mainstream press. And the James Douglas book, which is also worth reading, is about the assassination of President John Kennedy. Another example of Obama's reason for being afraid came on the Bill Maher show, and this is from a few years back, from the Washington Times. They say HBO's Bill Maher suggested during his show Friday that President Obama is leading as a centrist out of fear of being assassinated like John F. Kennedy. The real-time host said that leaders such as JFK always get cut out of the picture violently or otherwise, and maybe that is why Barack Obama is a little more of the centrist than we want him to be. So, let's talk a little bit about JFK. He was in a position similar during the when he was first elected when he took office in 1961. He was presented with the plans to invade Cuba, which had been started under the Eisenhower administration. And John Kennedy went along with it, but he refused to provide air cover, which enraged the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Later on, during the Cuban Missile Crisis, President Kennedy refused to bomb the Soviet Union, which further enraged the military. Kennedy was also he was really angry at the CIA for putting him in this. The Cuban invasion was a CIA plan from the start. And Kennedy felt that he'd been betrayed by the CIA, and he later fired Allen Dulles. During the missile crisis and later, there were secret communications between Kennedy and Nikita Khrushchev, because both of them, Kennedy and Khrushchev, felt that they were sort of hemmed in by their own hardliners. And they sort of worked out a peace deal between them privately, secretly. Well, anyway, this is later on, Kennedy did the same with Fidel Castro. So this is the reason why, to a lot of us, President John Kennedy was assassinated. Kennedy was an imperialist, just like President Obama, but he was not such a violent one as the war hawks wanted. That for all Kennedy's faults, he sure did something to anger the war hawks of his time. And so they got him. Later on, Robert Kennedy planned to get at the truth. The reason, and this is in a book called Brothers by David Talbot, who actually we've interviewed on this show a couple times. That's the reason why Robert Kennedy ran for president, that if he'd been elected, he would have opened up the investigation into the JFK assassination. Now, he had a move up. He originally planned to do this in 1972. But then when Lyndon Johnson was forced to retire from the presidency, Bobby Kennedy had to move up the timetable to 1968. And so he was... There were two anti-war candidates in those days. One was Senator Eugene McCarthy and then Senator Robert Kennedy. Well, Bobby Kennedy won the California primary, and he was killed that night. He was killed that night in the hotel in Los Angeles. He's walking through the kitchen, and he was shot, supposedly, by Sirhan Sirhan. Well, so here in the 60s, within 5 years, in 63, you had President John Kennedy assassinated. Then in 68, Martin Luther King was assassinated. And then just a few months later, Robert Kennedy. And basically, well, the U.S. has seemed like the U.S. has always been at war. But ever since then, it's like there have been wars ever since the 60s. The Vietnam War under President Nixon and President Ford, that went on until 1975. In 1973, under President Nixon, was the coup in Chile, where President Allende was assassinated. And you could consider this a U.S. war on the Chilean people. Then later on, President Ford went along with the bloodbath in Indonesia. In 1979, President Jimmy Carter, he went along with Brzezinski's scheme to fund the Mujahideen against the Soviets. Brzezinski had this wonderful idea to get the Soviets to invade Afghanistan. In other words, it would give the Soviets their own little Vietnam to cope with. And Carter went along with it. Then in the 1980s, under President Ronald Reagan, you had the invasion of Grenada, and you had Reagan's wars in Central America. Under George Bush the First, you had the first moves to break up Yugoslavia, and you had the Gulf War. Under Clinton, later on, you had Clinton pursued the Gulf War. And then later on, when the Soviet Union collapsed, Gorbachev had gotten a promise from George Bush the First that NATO would not take in the nations of Eastern Europe, and Clinton broke that promise. He moved NATO right up to the Russian border, which these days Putin is talking about as one reason for this with the goings on in Ukraine. Under George Bush II, we had the war in Iraq and the war in Afghanistan. And during that time, General Wesley Clark, he had been visiting friends at the Pentagon, and he revealed that when he went to the Pentagon shortly after 9/11, friends there told him that there was a plan to overthrow seven countries in the next 5 years. And those countries included Iraq, Iran, Afghanistan, Syria, Libya. And the timetable was a little optimistic, but they, I think just about all those seven countries have been under attack. And now we have Barack Obama seems to be pulling back from all-out war. He is shifting to drones and special forces operations. That's how he would fight an imperial war. And this is getting him in a lot of trouble, certainly with Republicans, with guys like Senator John McCain and Lindsey Graham and others, that they are saying that Obama is a wimp, and that he's under a lot of heavy public criticism, and we can only, just looking at the history, you can imagine what kind of private pressure he is under. So you have a history of presidents and leaders who are not going to go along with a war program being assassinated, and you have Obama himself telling people that he thinks that he could be meet the same fate as Martin Luther King. So what we have is it's like no matter who gets elected, the war party rules, and this is what they call the deep state. And there's a very interesting article about the deep state. What is it? Well, the deep state is sort of what continues to rule the country when one party goes out of power and another party comes in. And there's a very interesting article by Mike Lofgren, who is a former congressional staffer. And he says, there is a visible government situated around the mall in Washington, and then there is another more shadowy, more indefinable government that is not explained in Civics 101 or observable to tourists at the White House or the Capitol. The former is a traditional Washington partisan politics. The subsurface part of the article I should call the deep state, which operates according to its own compass heading, regardless of who is formerly in power. And then later on, he says, the deep state does not consist of the entire government. It is a hybrid of national security and law enforcement agencies, Department of Defense, Department of State, Homeland Security, Central Intelligence Agency, and the Justice Department. I also include the Department of Treasury because of its jurisdiction over financial flows, its enforcement of international sanctions, and organic symbiosis with Wall Street. All these agencies are coordinated by the Executive Office of the President via the National Security Council. So there you have sort of the rundown on who runs this country, sort of behind the scenes, in between administrations. And we might also ask, if you have a deep state, maybe the deep state has levels of depth. Maybe there's a deeper state of really clandestine criminal activities. You know, we see it talked about and described in books about the JFK assassination and the King assassinations. And now we have this curious thing going on Obama is sort of enmeshed. He's pulling troops out of Iraq and says he'll pull the troops out of Afghanistan. He is avoiding serious combat in Syria. He's always being pressured by the hawks to go deeper into the Syrian war. And the people who are doing this, the neocons, they are the same people who got us into war in Iraq years ago. They were the ones who talked about the weapons of mass destruction that we were never able to find. And after all their bad advice, you would think that they'd be sort of in disgrace. But no, they are not. They are all over the airwaves in Washington. They're the ones who get on the air and talk about our need for stronger action in Ukraine. They're stronger than ever. And if you want to read more about that, I really recommend articles by Robert Perry in Consortium News. This is Robert Perry's website. Robert Perry is a longtime journalist who was actually fired from by the Associated Press, I believe, back in the 80s because he reported on massacres in El Salvador. He is still around, still in Washington, and he writes for the Consortium News. And he has been writing about how Obama is surrounded by these neocons. They're in his administration. Victoria Nuland, who is the one who was saying, in effect, screw the European community, and talking about who would rule the Ukraine once they seized power, the one who was passing out cookies to the demonstrators in Kiev. She is one of the neocons, and she's married to one of the neocons. And so these folks are still there kind of trying to press Obama's buttons. And we can only wonder what kind of links do they have with the deep state or even the deeper state. And finally, we have Richard Cheney, who is sort of the, I guess you called him the arch neocon. I mean, he was recently speaking at this event in Las Vegas. This Sheldon Adelson, this billionaire gambling guy who's been hosting this Republican Jewish coalition at his Venetian Hotel, and where several presidential contenders, including Jeb Bush and New Jersey's Chris Christie, also Scott Walker of Wisconsin, they were there. And one of the speakers was Dick Cheney. And he was speaking that the U.S. ought to be bombing Iran. And these GOP bigwigs and candidates and donors were applauding. And we can bring this right up to yesterday, where the Supreme Court ruled that restrictions on campaign financing are out the window. There's not much left to prevent any millionaire or billionaire like Sheldon Adelson from spending all they want on political campaigns to buy the vote. So this sort of creeping, the war party is making all these gains. While they suffer their defeats, apparently Obama is standing in the way of their aims. But who knows what they have planned for Obama? They are very strong in Washington. The Supreme Court decision has made their position even stronger, and we really have to wonder, is the fix in? I don't know. I mean, some of these Supreme Court justices seem like fine people, but I'm not going to say that about all of them. We don't know how far this deep state extends, or the deeper state. We don't know what they have in store for us, but it's... I think we're in sort of perilous times. So that is, and you could say in a way, well, it began with the, we note it today because this is the eve of when Martin Luther King made his I Have Been to the Mountains speech in Memphis, and the next day he was assassinated. 46 years ago, the case has been solved, but nobody's ever been brought to justice. And the effects of that are with us still. And that is why this is an important event and should never, never be forgotten, what happened to Martin Luther King. Apparently, Barack Obama has not forgotten. So thank you for listening, and stay tuned for KBOO, your radio station.
And it's almost 10 a.m., and you do have it tuned to KBOO in Portland. Coming up next, it's Air Cascadia. Headlines, interviews, and commentaries with Chris Andre. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, Gareth Porter, investigative historian and journalist, on his new book, Manufactured Crisis, The Untold Story of the Iran Nuclear Scare, and Robert Weissman, president of Public Citizen, on yesterday's Supreme Court ruling striking down the limit on how much an individual can contribute to candidates. At 11 on Between the Covers, host Lisa Loving speaks with Portland author Nicole Moness about her latest novel, Night in Shanghai. And at 11:30 on Black Book Talk, the guest is author Peniel Joseph, who discusses his new book, Stokely, A Life. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. If you are not a KBOO member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today.
Ear to the Streets is a dynamic and stimulating conversation setting that brings together independent, hardworking Black African voices from the community to talk about the core issues impacting us that are whitewashed in mainstream America. Stay tuned for an upcoming Ear to the Streets panel discussion with a mix of revolutionary music on April 3rd, 2014 at 8 o'clock p.m. This next installment of Ear to the Streets will consist of conversations around the Black African community in Portland, Oregon, featuring Center for Self-Improvement, Moorish Science Temple, All African People's Revolutionary Party, and Par-Unc Kemetic Community, with a mix of music. Again, tune in April 3rd, 2014 at 8 o'clock p.m. right here on your community radio station, KBOO 90.7 FM, and online at kboo.fm.
Today is Thursday, April 3rd, 2014, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM, kboo.fm on the web. Headlines today. We have a lot of headlines, but we have two great, absolutely cracking guests. Jeff Milchen from Montana, the small business group there who had opposed Citizens United. Montana, if you recall, led the nation in opposing Citizens United. And once again, they've stepped to the fore. We have Jeff Milchen on the show today. He'll be talking a little bit more about that. We'll also be speaking with Steve Horn on one of the strangest incidents to come down the pike in a long time. I will let Steve tell you about that. Today will serve as an intro to a longer piece, perhaps tomorrow, where he will be able to take you through some of the twists and turns in a tangled web of corruption, which you're going to love. They're almost as good as the guy with the mushrooms and the magic metal and the baby porcupine yesterday. We also have report in the gunman in the Fort Hood shooting was an active duty enlisted soldier. He'd served 4 months in Iraq. He was being evaluated for PTSD. And I guess they just didn't evaluate fast enough, but then the military never does. It seems that someone who is begging for help, and this is a theme in America, not just in the military, across the board, people begging for help, saying, I'm desperate, I'm alone, help me. And then something terrible happens, and all around them, friends, family, the ineffable support structure says, oh, if only this person had said something, if only they'd reached out. But they do. And when they reach out, there's no one there. The Guardian reports the NSA performed warrantless searches on Americans' calls and emails, as we know from Clapper. Glenn Greenwald recently wrote the NSA blows its own top secret program in order to propagandize. Trevor Tim will be with us probably tomorrow to talk about that. Just a little bit of a heads up and foreshadowing. But today we'll be speaking with Jeff Milchen, co-founder of the Montana-based American Independent Business Alliance. This group was party to briefs to the Supreme Court in Citizens United. And Milchen's quote on this is of significance before we start speaking with the man himself. This decision expanding the Supreme Court's money equals free speech doctrine has made the democratic republic promised to us by our constitution impossible. Citizens' votes are stripped of power when the wealthiest few have predetermined which candidates and parties are acceptable for the rest of us to choose among. It goes a lot beyond simply, that's as if that were not bad enough. And you think about it, when you think about the environmental regulations and workplace regulations that will be rolled back once these people get elected, that's what's really scary. We do have a few more headlines. The Great Recession was a total surprise that left ludicrous gobsmacked sideways. We'll have a look at this lovely bridge. Once upon a time, the prosperity of the upper classes depended upon and to some degree underwrote the prosperity of the American middle class. Not so much now, since 2008. I love it. Now they've taken, mainstream media has taken to capitalizing the Great Recession, a totally fabricated fast track of funneling more money to the very wealthiest people in the nation. The century-old farmhouse is being demolished near Pendleton to allow workers to, wait for it, clean up the 5,000 gallons of diesel fuel spilled in an accident last month. There's more from around Cascadia. Don't know how we're going to fit all of this into the show, but right now, let's talk with Jeff about this recent Supreme Court decision. Good morning, Jeff, and thanks for being with us today.
My pleasure. Thanks.
Well, once again, Montana leading the charge. It's bad enough that we've just lost all semblance of a democracy, all of it. And while at the same time, galloping around the world, loudly proclaiming our many successes of establishing democratic institutions in countries far and wide. And here, what we've done is kick out all everything.